What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined by my co-host, as always, David Drogemeyer. And today, one of the original members of the show, John Kegley, joins the show to have some fun with us today. But first, we are three writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now this is our third season as the hosts of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys. Well, the time machine week continues this week. But first, as always, it's Undrafted Free Agent Friday. And it's the last edition of Undrafted Free Agent Friday. But first, we're going to start with the news that we got to hear from two of the Chargers' biggest offseason additions, Brian Bulaga and Chris Harris Jr., talking about the coaching staff and how familiarity helped them sign with the Chargers and why Chris Harris Jr. is going to play with a big chip on his shoulder going forward. And then we're going to be getting into Undrafted Free Agent Friday, covering the last three undrafted free agents. So today we're going to be talking about John Brannen, the cornerback out of Western Carolina, Kevin McGill, the corner out of Eastern Michigan, and also Darius Bradwell, the running back slash fullback out of Tulane. Before we end up wrapping the show with our time machine segment today, we're going back to the Chargers' only championship, their 1963 AFL championship under head coach Sid Gilman. So we're going to look back at that and look back at how different the world was in 1963 and how much has changed since the Chargers' only major championship. So let's go ahead and get into it. This week, we got to hear from two Los Angeles Chargers' new offseason additions when Chris Harris Jr. and Brian Bulaga opened up about why they signed with the team. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Los Angeles Chargers' new right tackle Brian Bulaga and new cornerback Chris Harris Jr. both spoke with the media this week, and they both had interesting things to say, but one thing that was a common theme from both of them for why they chose the Chargers over the other teams, because these were two highly coveted free agents and two guys that were very high on the Chargers list, was that they both had some familiarity with someone on the Chargers coaching staff who had coached them before. So for Brian Bulaga, that man was James Campen, who the Chargers brought in this year as their new offensive line coach, who spent a lot of time with Brian Bulaga and won a Super Bowl championship with him in their time with the Green Bay Packers. And when talking about his new slash old coach, Bulaga said that it's invaluable to have a guy that you trust in and that you know really well and that you can rely on day in and day out. You know exactly how he's going to be your coach. And I think that is obviously a huge reason why Bulaga signed with the Chargers, and having that familiarity, especially on an offensive line where chemistry is so important. So David, I think this is very important that he has a relationship with new offensive line coach James Campen, because I think it's going to not only help him get involved with the Chargers offense, but also help him get the rest of the offensive line ready and let them know what to expect from their new offensive line coach.
Well, and you have to think that this was all part of the master plan for the Chargers as well. I think they brought in James Campen with the added notion that they believed that they were going to go after Brian Bulaga in free agency, and obviously that worked out very, very well. Brian Bulaga also made another comment saying, "Going into a new place when I've been somewhere for 10 years and having a familiar face in the room, especially someone I trust very much, I think Coach Campen is a hell of a coach and a hell of a person." It makes a lot of sense for Brian Bulaga to go to a place where he already has familiarity in the coaching staff. That way he can feel like he can go in and step in and play right away. Got to remember, these guys have a special relationship. Brian Bulaga was given that opportunity in his rookie year to be the right tackle for the Packers in the playoffs, where he was also the right tackle in their Super Bowl win against the Steelers. That personal connection between Brian Bulaga and James Campen is not only going to help him, but I think it's going to help the rest of the offensive line, like you mentioned, get ready for his coaching style and acclimated a lot quicker with how things are going to run with a new offensive line coach. But Daniel, he's not the only one that came here because of familiarity in the coaching staff.
He is not, and that was a common theme from this press availability from these two guys. And I think what James Campen has been known for, especially in his time in Green Bay, was being able to turn lower round draft picks into high quality starters. And I think the Chargers are hoping for more of the same. And from what you heard from Bulaga, saying that the biggest thing is that he allows guys to be themselves. You can tell that James Campen is a player's coach, and this offensive line that is already here should respond well to that. So the other guy that got to talk was Chris Harris Jr., who is a guy that is always scrappy coming into the league as an undrafted free agent, and he's another guy who had familiarity with this Chargers coaching staff because he had Ron Miles as his secondary coach when he was with the Denver Broncos. So they have that familiarity there. They both won a Super Bowl together as well. So a lot of championship pedigree going around here. And what he said about Miles is he said, whatever you do, you can play outside safety, whatever. Always try to play the slot because he said, I'm one of the best at it. And that's what Chris Harris Jr. says he's brought in here to do. But one of the main things I took away, David, was just he came here because there was familiarity with the coaching staff. And he came here as well because he's hungry and has a chip on his shoulder to get back at the Denver Broncos for not believing in him.
Absolutely. And also he mentioned that there were some things going on in during that season last year, some off the field issues that really kind of clouded his thought process and his performance on the football field. It was one of his worst statistical seasons of his great NFL career thus far. He said, mentally, you never know how stuff is going will wear you down, and I think it just did. Going into the year, I feel so happy. I have a clear mind, and I am very comfortable here. It makes a lot of sense for him to be comfortable. I mean, look at all of the playmakers that Chris Harris Jr. gets to play along with, and that was another thing that he mentioned. You get a tag team with Derwin James, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, Linval Joseph. There is so much talent on this defense. Chris Harris Jr. adds to that. And with all of the incredible speedy wide receivers that are in the AFC West, there's never going to be enough cornerbacks to be able to quell those amazingly talented and fast receivers that he's going to have to go up against six times a year. I think for Chris Harris Jr., he's seeing this opportunity as a career resurgence and to solidify his spot in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
One, he's not resting on his laurels either. He also said that he wants to continue getting these Pro Bowl nods and All-Pro selection. That's what he's putting in the work for, and he's bringing a lot of chips to the table, and that's chips on his shoulder. And you would expect nothing less for a player who is like him, as feisty as he is, has had to work for everything, and I think that is also going to pay big dividends for the undrafted free agents. Having a guy that was just named to the all-decade team in the NFL for the 2010s as a guy who came into the league as an undrafted free agent, for him to share that valuable knowledge with these younger players is absolutely invaluable. So not only do I think he's going to bring production to the Chargers, but I think he's going to bring a ton of leadership as well. But we do have two more segments to get into. Next, we are going to be talking about our last group of undrafted free agents on Undrafted Free Agent Friday before wrapping the show up with a time machine segment going back to the Chargers lone championship in 1963. But first, I need to tell you guys that this episode is brought to you by Built Bar, which are the best protein bars in the world, and they're a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. My favorite part about Built Bars is just the variety that you get, along with the amazing taste. You get 16 amazing flavors with 4 brand new flavors that they've done for this Memorial Day week, and they're all soft and easy to chew and 100% covered in chocolate. One of my favorite flavors is the peanut butter brownie, which has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. So whether you're trying to gain weight or lose weight, you can do that with Built Bar. And right now we can even save you a little bit of money, because if you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you can get $10 off your first order. That's promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, for $10 off your order at builtbar.com. We even have an extra deal for you guys today. If you go on to it this week during Memorial Day week, you can even get an additional $5 off. So that's $15 off at builtbar.com with the promo code locked on. All right, guys, well, we're excited to bring another edition of the Undrafted Free Agent Friday to you guys. It's been one of my favorite segments, and I can't believe it's already coming to a close, but I guess we got a lot out of it. This is our 5th week doing this, and there's 19 undrafted free agents for the Chargers, and we have covered 16 of them so far, so we have 3 left to get into today. 2 corners, we have Kevin McGill from Eastern Michigan, as well as John Brannan from Western Carolina. I know once you're getting to Eastern Michigan's and Western Carolina's, you're really getting out there. But we also have a 2-lane running back slash fullback, Darius Bradwell, who had some impressive tape as well. But the first guy I want to start with is John Brannan, who is a cornerback, which is a position on this team that you could potentially make some waves, because I don't think that Brannan Faison is a guy that we think is a lock just to make this team, right? Because he is the guy that got in last year, and I know we liked his tackling ability, but he was targeted over and over again in coverage when Michael Davis was injured and gave up a lot of receptions. So I think that is a position on this team, even with a shortened offseason, that you could make some waves. And this is a guy, John, that played at the FCS level. We saw the Chargers take a chance on a guy like that last year with Nazir Adderley. So, John, what did you see from cornerback John Brannan?
Well, before anybody starts to say, well, he's from West Carolina, that must mean he's a nobody. Just remember a couple of years ago, we got Tre'Quan Newsome from West Carolina, and he was pretty good until he got some injuries.
He made the team.
Yeah, so we could. You never know what these guys could be like, but I feel like this guy is someone that was really inconsistent from what I saw on film. His numbers aren't really impressive. His career high for a season is 3 interceptions and 55 tackles. He sometimes looks like he plays aggressive. He can get off a block, but then there's times where it looks like he's just taking the block and just trying to get out of the game. Doesn't look like he's trying to win. He just wants to go home. That's what it looks like on some of these blocks. There's times where you see him going toe-to-toe with a wide receiver and getting a hand on the ball, flies around like a ball hawk, and then there's other times where it looks like he's just not keeping up. He's not fast enough. He didn't really play against the greatest competition either, and so to see him doing these kind of things against low competition really worries me. But he also had his moments against North Carolina State. Against Alabama, he had some pretty good tape, but when it came to like run coverage and stuff, you seemed to really, really get pushed out of the play a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was why my biggest frustration when watching him was just not fighting off blocks, because there were times where he could be very physical. He could come up and lay imposing hits on people, but you want to see consistency, and that's not something that you really got from him. But you can see why the Chargers did it. He's a guy who has good length. He's 6'2", about 200 pounds. He's a pretty big guy, especially for a lower division player, and he plays with an attitude, and you like to see that. He also, I mean, he had 7 career interceptions, but the thing that impressed me about the interceptions was just how they happened. It wasn't just guys getting overthrown and he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It's him getting his hand on a ball, knocking it up into the air, picking it off, him high-pointing a ball and taking it back for a touchdown. He did that a couple of times. And I was impressed, especially for an FCS player. Do I think it translates into the NFL? Maybe not, but I definitely see why the coaching staff went after this guy. I think he's a guy that you can see the physical tools, even though we didn't really see the top-end speed get tested very much, and I think that could definitely be an issue. But as far as a guy that can come up and make tackles, I thought when he got to tackles, he was actually pretty solid, but too many times you just saw him not be able to get off a block from a wide receiver or someone and have a big play go right in behind him. So I think those are things that are definitely issues at the next level. But he did have some good instincts. He jumped some routes. He had, you know, times where he had big hits playing against the run. He had a play where he knocked a blocker 3 yards back into a ball carrier that forced a fumble. He has plays like that, but the consistency just wasn't there. So let's get into the next guy, another cornerback. This one is from Eastern Michigan, which is an FBS school. They play in the MAC, and this is Kevin McGill, who I have a lot of thoughts on him. I mean, I feel like I have a lot of just kind of so-so thoughts on him. But David, when you were watching Kevin McGill and when you were looking up what he was able to do in college, what did you come up with?
Yeah, so Kevin McGill, first thing that stood out to me is he's got good size. Another big cornerback, another, you know, prototypical Gus Bradley type of guy. 6'2", 200 pounds, so he definitely has the size and length. Only 5 interceptions in his career, and this was a guy that played most games. He only missed, I think, 2 games in his career, and he was a 3-time All-MAC player. So he did excel at the level that he was at, but the interceptions he got were some of the, you know, more the gimme ones, the ones that you were mentioning, you know, with an overthrow or, you know, just some of those really easy ones. He corralled those. He didn't really show any really like outstanding ball skills. It you know, just didn't seem like that was really his strength. I thought he was decent in press. I thought he can run okay. He doesn't have blazing speed. I don't think that's definitely something that's a bit of a concern. He needs to look for the ball, which that's a common theme for all of these guys. He'll put his hands up, but he doesn't go to look for the football. And you do that in the NFL, you're going to get called for PI 99% of the time. One thing I did like a lot was, you know, when he had an opportunity to move downhill, read and react, and go attack a ball carrier, I thought he did excel doing that a couple of times. I did watch that and enjoy that part of his game. Do I think his skill set translates to the NFL? I don't think so, just because I don't think he has the physical gifts that are going to translate to the next level. He just doesn't have the speed for me. And like I said, he wasn't the best tackler, so I just don't know if his overall package is going to be able to translate. There's an opportunity to make it at corner, but I don't think that spot is going to go to Kevin McGill Jr.
I will say between these two guys, they both like to hold. They both like to cheat and get a
little
grasp
grabby. Receiver. Definitely.
Yeah, there was a lot of that between Brennan and McGill, so that alone makes me really cautious about what they'd be like in preseason.
And I think that's a theme that we've seen from a lot of these corners too, even some of the guys that were drafted. I mean, you just can get away with different things in college. So I understand if you're in college, use everything that you can. You can be physical throughout the route. You don't have to stop it at 5 yards. But at the NFL, you're going to get a flag every time for that, even with the slightest tug of a jersey. I mean, even last year when watching the Chargers, you could see that sometimes it didn't even take that to get a holding call against them. So, I mean, at the NFL level, that all has to stop. And I think especially getting his head around, one of my notes is when he gets his head around, I mean, he almost always at least contests the catch. But I also watched him, you know, get beat up a little bit by a FCS receiver against Monmouth, where he had a pretty rough game and had some moments where he
white.
Wasn't.
Yeah. White bodied him a couple of times in that game.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, going up against lesser competition, let alone, you know, just not going up against the best competition in the MAC conference. So he did, you know, put up an impressive career overall, playing 40 games. He's tied for the most passes defended in the Eastern Michigan career with 28. He made a lot of the plays on the ball, but there's definitely just some really concerning signs that going up to the next level, I mean, those are all things that have to fix. But it doesn't seem, you know, when you're looking at these guys, the Chargers were that worried about their top end speed, because these are definitely not burners. But there is another guy I want to get to. Another guy that I came away pretty impressed with, especially, I mean, going up against the talent that he did. A guy who I thought did pretty well in his time at Tulane, which was Darius Bradwell. He's a guy that I was looking at for the Chargers even before this, when we were looking at, you know, late round running backs the Chargers could target if they didn't want to spend, you know, a mid round pick on one like they ended up doing with Josh Kelly. But John, I mean, for a guy that's listed as a fullback, I mean, I definitely think he is fast enough. I think he moves well enough to just play straight up running back. But another guy where I really understand why the Chargers decided to bring this guy in, even in a crowded running back room.
Yeah, I loved this guy's film. And the weird thing about him is he was actually a quarterback when he first came to Tulane. And then he became a running back and into a fullback with this spread option hybrid offense that Tulane likes to run. And he excelled in it really well. He did a really good job of reading the holes, but after he got past the holes, there were some bonehead moments where there's like all this green grass, and for some reason he'd run over and run into his wide receiver that's blocking. I still can't figure that part out, but stats wise, he had some pretty decent stats. Like his junior year, he had 201 carries for 1,134 yards, 5.6 yards a carry, and 11 touchdowns. His senior year, that number dropped down, but he still had 4.4 yards per carry. He still gets a lot of yards per carry, and that's something the Chargers need. We need that power type of running to keep the offense going, even when Eckler's on the sideline. Is Josh Kelly going to be that guy? Probably, but when it comes to the goal line, to have a nice fullback like that, it'd be pretty good. And he's got some speed. There's sometimes he got to the open field and he took off. He outran all the corners and the safeties, and he wasn't just barely outrunning them. He was getting separation. This guy looks like a playmaker.
Yeah, I liked what I saw for him as well. And I thought for a guy of his side, for his size, he actually had some pretty nice cuts that he strung together at times. Obviously, sometimes that got him in trouble when he was stopping his feet and not getting upfield. But I thought, you know, when he found the hole, he got through it and broke arm tackles. He was a pretty physical runner. A lot of those yards that you're talking about come after contact. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And one of the notes I had is, you know, in a year where the Chargers don't draft a running back and have three locks to make the team, I think this guy has a good shot. So I think between him and Derek Gore, I think one of those guys will absolutely end up making the practice squad. Obviously, Derek Gore has some familiarity after spending time with the Chargers in 2019 during the offseason. But I was impressed with this guy. I thought, you know, had some ability to make guys miss. He's definitely not electrifying. He's not super explosive. I don't know if there's one thing that he does exceptionally well, but I thought he did a lot of things pretty well. And I think when you're talking about a guy like this, it's either jack of all trades or a master of none. I thought he brought a little bit of everything to the table, and I came away pretty impressed by him. I mean, they still ended up playing some pretty decent teams, and he always seemed to have a good game even when he wasn't always getting the action that he should. And he, one thing that comes along with that is just not having a lot of tread on those tires. He has a lot of work left ahead of him, and I think he will catch on somewhere, because I was absolutely impressed by his tape, and I definitely understand why the Chargers brought him in. But we do have one more segment to get into. We're hopping back in time, all the way back to 1963, of the season the Chargers won their AFL championship and their only franchise championship, coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, it's time for the final time machine segment of the week. I think it's been a pretty fun week, even though we've looked back at a couple of seasons where things didn't end up the way that Chargers fans would have liked. But now today we're talking about a season that ended up exactly how you would like it to go as a fan, going all the way back to 1963, where the Chargers have their lone franchise championship. Of course, it's not a Super Bowl championship. It's an AFL championship, but when you're the Chargers, you'll take what you can get. And I think this was the most interesting one, because just looking back to 1963, I mean, all of the things that happened in that year and just how much different that is than the world that we're living in now. So just to give you an example, I mean, the lava lamp was created. That was probably my favorite one. But the computer mouse was created, the modern hang glider, which must have been, you know, messy trying to get that into stores and, you know, being sold worldwide. But David, it was a much different world the last time the Chargers won a championship, and won their only championship.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, a couple other things, too. I mean, the Kennedy assassination took place in 63. Alcatraz prison closed. The zip code was introduced. I thought that was a crazy thing. Also, Martin Luther King Jr. authored probably one of the most famous speeches in history, his I Have a Dream speech. But also, you can look at some of these opponents that the Chargers were playing against, the Boston Patriots and the Houston Oilers. Those are teams you just don't see anymore. Obviously,
they don't exist anymore.
Right, they don't exist anymore. They've changed names, changed locations. So that just kind of gives you a great idea of a time that was clearly yesteryear.
Yeah, and gas was only 30 cents a gallon, milk was 49 cents a gallon, and it only cost $100 for a full year of tuition at the University of Texas. I added that one just for my big hook'em guy over here, John Kegley. But John, I know you revel in going back and looking at some of the best teams of this franchise, and this was a weird stretch for the Chargers, because they almost became the Buffalo Bills before the Buffalo Bills, because they went to five AFL title games and only came away with one of them. But this was a season where they just truly had a special year, and they finally ended up getting the job done. I'm sure you have a lot of weird notes for how that ended up happening.
Well, I mean, let's just start with the fact that this game was played, or this team played, at Balboa Stadium, as was the championship, which is now San Diego High School's football field, with two concrete bleachers on both sides compared to the old horseshoe it used to be. And the schedule, man, just looking at the schedule, like, they played the Boston Patriots in week two that year and only won 17-13. They lost to Denver 34-50, and they were swept by the Raiders. But yet this team still comes back, gets revenge on the Broncos 58-20, and destroys the Patriots 51-10. This team took some things really easily in the beginning, but you could see that they were slowly but surely getting better as the season went on. Just the way the point differences go, they start off winning by four, winning by four, winning by 14. The next thing you know, they're winning by 21. They're winning by 46. They're winning by 27, winning by 38. They started getting better, and they started finding their groove. And then when it came to the championship game, they just weren't going down. And Keith Lincoln just absolutely went off, having, what was it at that point, the all-time record for yards in a playoff game with 329. Which was later broke by the Chiefs player, Ed Podolak, who had 350 yards on a Christmas Day game against the Dolphins.
Yeah, and before we get into deeper into the actual game itself, there were a lot of stars on this Chargers team, and some of them you may have heard of, and some of them you may not have. And one of the guys, obviously, that was on this team is the Chargers Hall of Famer, Lance Allworth, who was, you know, the best receiver in the league at that time. He ended up being the player of the year by the... He was named the United Press International 1963 player of the year, Ben David. We don't really see a lot of stats from that time that could compare to the stats that we see today, especially passing stats wise. But when you look at, I mean, this offense specifically for the Chargers putting up so many points compared to the rest of the teams in the league, they averaged the fewest points allowed against them that year, and they scored the most points out of anyone. So they averaged the most points per game and averaged the least amount of points against them per game that year. They were a dominant team that had some dominant players.
Without a doubt. And they also had a very interesting quarterback situation too. They had two quarterbacks that played pretty much the entire season. I mean, you look at their starting quarterbacks, Tobin Rote, 2,510 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, and 17 interceptions. That was a first-team All-Pro year for him. So just to kind of give you an example. And then also you had John Hadle, who had 502 yards passing and 6 touchdowns with 6 interceptions. Then you go to the running backs, some great numbers here. Paul Lowe, 1,010 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns on the ground, 2 through the air. Keith Lincoln, 826 rushing yards, 5 TDs on the ground, 3 through the air. And then you go to the big number, and that's the number Daniel was alluding to earlier about a number you would see today, and that is 23-year-old Lance Allworth, 61 receptions, 1,205 yards, 11 touchdowns, and a 19.8 yards per reception average. Now, mind you, Mike Williams last year led the NFL with a 20 yard per reception average. So Lance Allworth was literally right behind that, and that was in the running era of 1963. So that gives you an idea of how incredibly impressive Lance Allworth's 1963 season, Daniel.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, he did it in 14 games, right? So, I mean, he definitely would have caught up to Mike Williams' numbers. He also had 11 more catches, or he had, you know, more catches than Mike Williams did. But I thought that he was basically a video game character in those days. There's a video of this AFL championship game where he just absolutely mosses a guy for a touchdown. But the game itself, I mean, was never close. The Chargers were up 31-10 at halftime against the Patriots, which, even though knowing it's a much different team, still, you know, makes me feel good about it. But they were only favored in the game by 7 points, and they ended up winning the game 51-10 behind Keith Lincoln, who John was talking about, the most yards from scrimmage ever at that time. 13 rushes for 206 yards, a 15.8 yard average, and 7 catches for 123 yards, 17.6 average. It's hard to have a more impactful game than that, John. And you combine that with the fact that the Chargers defense ended up sacking Patriots quarterback Babe Parilli 6 times. I mean, Babe Parilli, you remember that name? Well, I mean, it's not your fault. Nobody does. But at the same time, I mean, this helped the Chargers, I mean, finally get that lone championship that they have in their franchise. I'm sure they didn't think it would, you know, be the only one at this point as we're sitting here in 2020. But looking at that game and just the numbers that Keith Lincoln was able to put up, and just looking at that Chargers team and how overwhelming they were, it's definitely something that's very cool for Chargers fans to look back on and kind of reflect on and see how different it was and how good the Chargers were that season.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing the numbers they put up. I mean, even Darren Sproles in his historic wild card game against the Colts in 08 put up 328 all-purpose yards in that game, which was only a yard behind Keith Lincoln. And Keith Lincoln, a guy who is not a freight train like some of these guys are today, was able to put up those numbers. Lance Allworth, who's not this freakishly athletic guy like a Julio Jones, put up those numbers. These guys were a bunch of guys that shouldn't even been on an NFL roster, really. The AFL was a bunch of players that basically weren't on an NFL team and made their own league. And now here they are dominating on the Chargers roster and becoming NFL Hall of Famers.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, such an inspiring performance by the Chargers. You only wish that you could have been around to see things. You know, I mean, the stadium was absolutely packed. The Chargers were in a championship game, and they showed up for it and absolutely dominated, which is something that's almost unfathomable right now. But looking at guys like Keith Lincoln, who the next season actually ended up getting hurt in the championship game that the Chargers lost to the Buffalo Bills 20-7, that could have been totally different had, you know, their all-star player not gotten hurt. And I mean, just looking at the names like Lance Allworth and Paul Lowe and guys like that, I mean, it just, for Chargers fans, that was kind of their golden era. I mean, this comes, you know, around the same time as the Don Coryell things that came after that, and this was just the Chargers, you know, being kind of ahead of their time. But Overall, they end up going 1-4 in those AFL title games, but thank God they ended up not going 0-5 because, you know, as Chargers fans, we would have never heard the end of it. But it was cool looking back on the 1963 season. This is the deepest look that I've ever taken at this, but that Chargers team was not just a fluke year. I mean, that was a really, really good team, and they were doing things a lot differently than other teams were at that point, which is why they were able to put up 51 points in their version of a Super Bowl in those days. But that is going to wrap things up for today and for this week. This was a fun time machine week. We'll have a new theme for you guys and new stuff to talk about next week. But until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a follow on Spotify and rating and reviewing there. We would really appreciate it. If you guys haven't already, make sure to call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail line. You can get your voice on the Locked On Chargers show by calling 323-524-7924. Every Chargers voicemail gets played on the show. And we're waiting on some new ones, guys. So make sure you call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail. But we'll be back with you guys next week, as always, for 5 more episodes of Locked On Chargers. But until then, take it easy and go Bolts.